Welcome to the very first Ardoisier of this season. It's been over 3 months since we last saw the tour of Lombardy, and a lot has changed in the peloton. But whilst snow is literally pouring in front of me here in Europe, back in Australia it's already good weather, great weather to start the cycling season. So we're going to look at the build-up for the Tour Down Under, and more specifically we're going to ask the questions that pop up in mind and we hope to see answered during the race in Australia. Question number one. Does Simon Gerrans still have what it takes? It might seem bizarre to start a preview with a rider that's 36 years old, has gone 11 months without a single victory, and who mostly made the headlines last year due to his conflict with Bling Matthews. But I guess that's what 4 victories in the Tour Down Under do with you. There seems to be a very special love relationship between Gerrans and the Tour Down Under, a bit like Bonen has with Roubaix, or Andrea Guardini with the Tour of Langkawi, something like that. Last year, Gerrans managed to dominate the Tour Down Under with 2 stage victories and the final GC classification. So we do still see him as a candidate in general, especially because the setup of the race matches him like a glove. No big mountains, but hilly rolling terrain, with 2 crucial stages, one in Paracomp and one on Old Wollongong Hill. Next to that, he also has a team that's really focused on this race. For Orica Greenwich, or currently called Orica Scott, this is still a crucial race in their season. They have made the conversion from an Australian-based team to a real world team, especially considering the fact that their main riders nowadays are Colombian and Brit. But that doesn't change the fact that for Orica Scott, the Tour Down Under still remains a crucial one to ensure their home base, fan base is with them. So they will certainly focus to try to win this. No wonder that they always loved the fact that Gerrans was a good match with this race. A third very good factor why we still have to watch out for Gerrans and why he's still top-notch for many of the betters is that he has great form. During the net race, he came very close to the title and only very smart Miles Scottson avoided his victory over there. So a lot of cards seem to be on Gerrans. But there's a major question. Does he still have the quality to make it in the World Tour Peloton of today in the Tour Down Under today? So what's it gonna be? My answer to this question in advance would probably be that I'm afraid it's too late for Gerrans. If we look back on his career, I'm afraid we'll look to the Tour Down Under of 2016 as his last big stand, and today might be the one too many. He will certainly show himself, he will certainly try to be there both at Paracomp and at Old Wollongong Hill, but I do feel he's not ready anymore to take home victory. His current form will probably land him somewhere in the top 10, but I'm afraid I can't see Gerrans as the number one candidate. Question number 2. How hungry is King Peter? Peters again headlines the starting list, as in any race he actually starts, and he has been one of the first riders to arrive in Australia already a week or 3. I think it does show a certain attitude from Peter Sagan in what might be one of his most important seasons. He has left Tinkoff, where he will always be one of the stars next to the GC contenders, to the small German outfit of Bora Hansgrohe, where he will be the pivotal man. Not to say that Bora doesn't have other great riders, I'm looking at Maschke, I'm looking at Koenig, but he will be the face of the team more than ever. And the fun part about Peter Sagan, and part of the reason why we always love him, is that he is always there to make it a race. Last season, across 73 race days, he managed to score 14 wins and 32 podium places, which is incredibly strong considering the field he often competes in. And, of course, if he takes a start in Tour Down Under, there's only one question you can ask. Will he be capable of winning it? Will he be capable of winning stages? One fact is that the terrain fits him. He's been once to Australia before, which was in 2010, a long time ago, even for the writer Peter Sagan. The fact is that even then, the very young Peter Sagan did manage to end up fifth in Woolloonga Hill. And also the stage to Paracomp, the other queen stage of this year's edition, looks like something that should be in his skill set. On the other hand, Peter Sagan always has taken a relatively slow start, relative considering Peter Sagan. Usually he starts his season in Qatar or in San Luis, two races which won't happen this year, but he never actually got a victory over there. That's obviously because his main targets are later on in the season in the classics, and he doesn't have to be 100% yet. So his form is still a bit of a question mark, he's still in build-up for later on in the season. But this race will probably show us something about which role he will have in his new team. Why am I saying so? Because even Peter Sagan at 80%, 90% is still a threat for the whole peloton, is still a rider that can win actually any of the six stages out there. So the question will be, does he want to win these stages? Does he want to compete and be the central rider of his team? Or does he have an eye out for his teammates? First of all, an eye out for Sam Bennett, the Irish sprinter, who would certainly be able to try his luck, by example, in the stage to Adelaide, the final stage, should be something where Sam Bennett could be able to do his thing. But what will Bora do? Will they focus on Peter Sagan? Or will they try and give Sam Bennett a good start of his season? More importantly, it goes for the final victory of this of the Tour Down Under, sorry, where Jay McCarthy, the Australian, with a good form, has already voiced that he wanted to be the leader for this Tour Down Under, especially after his fifth place of last year. My prediction for this question will be that Sagan takes up his responsibility as a leader and allows his teammates to get their chances, to go their chances, by supporting Bennett for a sprint, by supporting McCarthy for the final classification. Sagan could try to win one stage, maybe two, where he wants to focus on his role, wants to try out how good he feels this season, but this is the moment where he's going to have to give something to get a lot back later on in the season. Question number three, what will be the role of Rowan Dennis in the PMC setup? I'm mentioning this because Rowan Dennis has voiced the ambition to turn from a time trial rider into a Grand Tour rider. And one of the first steps in that transformation, to say so, has been his plan to start a Giro this year. And we wondered if he already capable of showing that changed role in the Tour Down Under. It's a race which he has a lot of good history. He won it in 2015 after winning in Paracomp, and his form is great, as he's shown in time trial national race, where he won with a record time. However, he does have one big competitor, the main favorite for the victory in my eyes. He's called Richie Porte in his own team. So I'm pretty curious to see what the build-up will be. BMC has two horses. They have Rowan Dennis, of course, who is in a good form, but never has been the best on Woolloonga Hill. And we have the unofficial king of Woolloonga Hill, the man who won there 3 years in a row, Richie Porte. Richie Porte not only has experience in the race, he also has the motivation as a home rider and is capable of peaking at the Tour Down Under. Considering the way he builds up his season towards the Tour de France, he can take another low during, let's say, April, and then build up back again to the Tour de France. My guess or my prediction would be that Richie Porte will be the focus rider for BMC, but that the fact that Rowan Dennis is also riding in red allows them to try out a good tactical scheme. Rowan Dennis, as he has shown in the Indycar Tour, has the capacity to be crucial in these kind of races, to drop most of the peloton, and even if there is no time trial, I consider him able to be the ace up the sleeve of BMC. The fact that he can try two different tactics allows him a lot of freedom, and even augments the chances of Richie Porte to win the Tour Down Under. So my five-star candidate to win next week would be Richie Porte. Question number 4. What do we have to fear from the Colombian wave? As it is that three of the most exciting Colombian writers of the current generation, and they do have a lot of those in store, are at the starting line of the Tour Down Under. First of all, there's Juan Esteban Chávez. Last year, across the 12 months, he became the most beloved rider of the peloton due to his unique combination of style, friendly rider, and always attacking, always trying to make the race more interesting. At first, there were a few question marks about his role in the Tour Down Under as the first time he participates to the race, and you would think that his focus points for the season are later on in spring. So the question remained, why did Orica Scott start him? Is he just a backup for Jarns, or is he actually the main man? It's difficult to really pinpoint one or the other. I think Matt White, the team manager there, remained a bit vague about who would be their number one man. Officially, it's Jarns, but okay, Juan Esteban Chávez is also a key rider, something like that. For me, I believe that Juan Esteban could be the number one rider there. As mentioned, for Orica Scott, this Tour Down Under is still a crucial thing, and they haven't made a secret of trying to make Chávez half an Australian, say so. And as he likes it with the team, as he's feeling very much at home with the team, he hasn't really objected to that either. So Chávez could be main contender to challenge Richie Porte. The same goes for the other Colombian, Sergio Henao, who will start his Tour Down Under for Team Sky. Last year he was already third, and that should be a good sign for him. But the only downside with Sergio Henao is that he's not much of a winner type. He's found it very difficult to finish off his race. While everyone agrees that he's strong in this kind of races, the hilly type, all the way going up to the mountain type. That's also part of the reason why at Sky he doesn't get considered as a Grand Tour racer. They've got Froome, of course, and with Mikel Landa and Geraint Thomas, the places seem to be up there. By the way, Geraint Thomas also taking the start, but I would be surprised to see him really peaking already. So, for now, I think the main focus will be trying to show himself in the one-week races and maybe take that step up next season or the season after that. And therefore, this Tour Down Under is so important for him. He has to show that he's capable of leading the team. The third Colombian I would like to point you to is Harlinson Pantano. Of course, we're very curious to see him for the first time with the track team, seeing the new shirt also, which is, by the way, marvelous, the red-black outfit. So it's a bit of a question mark in how far he will be out there to try and take it away. Knowing Pantano, he will certainly try and attack, show his colors, but the ambitions seem to be relatively low, so I don't expect him as a victor, but rather later on in the season, maybe at Paris-Nice or Tirreno-Adriatico. My take, with Chávez and Henao, we have the two main contenders to challenge Richie Porte for the Tour Down Under. Pantano will certainly show his colors, but not much more. Question number 5. Will Cannondale be able to erase the zero from last year? Last season, Cannondale came out with a very negative record, as they won not a single World Tour race all year long. In fact, it has been since the Giro of 2015, since Davide Formolo, that they won a race at World Tour level. That's not to say that they did bad last season. They were, in addition to the peloton, did ride very attractive, a lot of attacks, a lot of good results, but they did miss that one victory or to really fire off things. So why am I singling them out today for the Tour Down Under is the fact that they have a lineup that's focused on bringing home that first victory of the season and as such to really be, to start them off at a good foot and turn things around from last year. A team from Voters has a lot of riders from the continent itself, which is always an addition in the Tour Down Under to have some Australians who are, whatever way you look at it, a bit more focused to bring home that result. And with William Clark and Brandon Canty, and not forget Pat Bevan, the Kiwi, they have riders that seem to be in the right form already. Especially Brandon Canty, we all had a good laugh when he raised his hands one lap too early in the National Championships, difficult word there. But the fact that he was in the position to raise his hand so early shows that he's in a good form. Officially, the team starts with two aces, Rusty Woods and Tommy Hilfiger. Michael Woods, Canadian, is being considered one of the strongest riders in the business, and he did very good in Australia last year and the third on Wollongong Hill. Knows the race well and had a good end of season in 2016, which always boosts yourself to be good in winter and lift yourself back up for a new year. The only downside is that Michael Woods appears to be a bit of a metaphor for his own team. Strong rider, admirable rider, but he does struggle sometimes to turn that into a victory. The second ace Cannondale has under sleeve is Tommy Hilfiger. When Tommy Hilfiger is good, he's incredibly good. We remember Paris-Nice 2015, the Tour Down Under he won in 2013, I believe it was. And that's a bit the problem with Hilfiger, if he's good. And he's not always good. Mainly because he struggled with a lot of injuries. His 2016 season went down the drain due to knee injuries. So he's going to need that positive vibe to find himself back again and find the best Hilfiger. There were a lot of signs of good winter, and he has had his focus on this race already early in the year. He's really hoping to do good in this Tour Down Under. My prediction for the Cannondale team is they'll get a stage victory, but not the final victory. I would really hope it for them, because that could be the start of a season where they change things around since 2016, turning that third places, turning that fourth places into victories. If I would have to pick up one person for a stage victory, it would be Rusty Woods. I do feel that he matches with the Paracomp circuit and he could really make a bit of a dent there down under. Question number 6. Will Quickstep Floors get their kicks? Admittedly, I did formulate the question, so it would rhyme. But the main fact is two of the most exciting riders from 2016 appear at the starting line of the Tour Down Under and both in a Quickstep Floors outfit. Especially because there are two riders that seem able to make another step up in 2017. First of them is Brambilla, Gianluca Brambilla. I'll have to be honest, I do like the guy, he always tries to make it a race. He's attacking, but today, at this point of the season, he doesn't still look to be in build-up. I've taken a look to his calendar, it's looking long, it's looking heavy, it's looking a lot of World Tour races. One thing that did interest me, made me start him in my preview of the Tour Down Under, was the fact that a long calendar, a heavy calendar with Giro d'Italia, did not stop from winning him his first race in 2016, back then in Mallorca. So I'm sure he will try to pick out his one stage where he will try to be a candidate for a stage victory. But the official team leader is Peter Vakoc, one of the breakthrough riders of 2016. First of all, he has the confidence of the team and he finds a hilly terrain where he can do well. Remember Strade Bianche, the race in Quebec, the Brabantse Pijl, which he won, and European Championships, where he did really, really well. It's the kind of race where he could really show himself. Last season, he was also in the Tour Down Under. He was, I think, somewhere 25th, 30th, I don't remember. But I think he has made a real evolution across the season and is now ready to charge for a top 5. From my point of view, I think he's ready to take on Paracomp. On the old Wollongong Hill, he will struggle to really match up to the very best, which should land him somewhere between 6th place, 7th place, 8th place, something like that. I do hope best for Petr Vakoc, but I think that's the maximum is in there. But it does allow him to grow towards the rest of the season, where he will take a new big step up. Question number 7. How many stages will Caleb Ewan win? And I just realized the fact that I formed this question in the sense of how many and not will he win a stage already shows the importance for the big sprint ace of Australia. The Pocket Rocket has been great in the crit, has shown himself not only in the sprints but also with attacks, and has at the start of a very important season. There were a few people who said his 2000 season wasn't good. But moderately not good enough. Let's say it like this. When he first broke through in the scene in 2015, he was a huge thing coming out of nowhere for anyone who wasn't from Australia. It was amazing to see how he stepped up that level. In 2016, he did win the Hamburg race and two stages in the Tour Down Under. I would say that's a pretty good, pretty good result for a rider his age. But his moderate Giro race did seem to say otherwise for a lot of people. I think that was a bit harsh for a rider who's still only 22 and who, by riding that Giro d'Italia, has grown as a rider. So I do believe that he is going to the Tour Down Under as the start of a season in which the expectations, the bar will be set higher once more. And, well, starting the season with a victory in the international peloton will certainly allow him to mentally also prepare for that step up. He wants to race to a higher tier of sprinters. I think the real top level, the Kittel Cavendish level, is maybe 2 years away for him, 3 years away for him, not for this season yet, but the tier below certainly should be in his possibilities. And to show that he masters that level, he has to show he can win stages in the Tour Down Under. For his team, he is the main fast man, of course. Question could be if the team is ready to support him full, considering the fact they have Gerrans and Chavez already for the GC classification, which only leaves four more riders. But the way they did it last season brought in two victories, and I think he can do it as well this year. Especially the final stage in Adelaide should be something that suits him like a glove. My prediction is that he can bring it home twice for Orica Greenedge, but I do believe that will be the only two stages won by the Australian outfit. And I did say Orica Greenedge once again. I really should get used to Orica Scott by now. Question number 8. How many sprints will we actually see in the Tour Down Under? That might seem a bit of a stupid question after predicting that Caleb will win two stages, but the question I ask is, well, who else will try to aim for a sprint? The fact is that there are four stages with a potential sprint, but only the final crit in Adelaide seems to be a sure fix, and even then. The reason I'm asking that question is because, apart from Caleb Ewan, the main sprinters are not here. There's no Cavendish, there's no Kittel. There's even not André Greipel, who used to start his season in Australia and is one of the riders, maybe even the rider with the most stage victories in Tour Down Under history. So it's going to be search for Caleb Ewan to find other riders who want to work with him towards sprint stage. One team that certainly should be able to do something for him should be the Abu Dhabi outfit. They have gone through a very difficult period trying to find the funds to actually take the start this season. And I do have the feeling they want to bounce back with results and immediately show themselves as a World Tour team. Their shirt, which looks like an amateur side, will not help them with it, so they'll have to show it with their legs. And if you talk about fast legs, Ben Swift just pop up. Ben Swift is going for a very, very crucial season of his career. His second place in Milan-San Remo did show him he can win that classic, and that's certainly on the top of his list of priorities for this year. But on the other hand, he only got 3 victories in the last 4 seasons. That's not good enough for a main sprinter, that's just a fact. Going away from Sky and taking the start with his own, well, not his own Abu Dhabi team, but as a sprinter on his own, will show very much whether he's capable to deal with the pressure, to deal with leading a team or not. So, a very, very crucial year coming up for him. And let's see if he can align his team towards working for him and towards setting him up for the sprint. Another side that could help out Ewan and Swift would be the Giant team. They have 2 aces up their sleeve. Nikias Arndt and Phil Bauhaus, they might seem tier 3 sprinters, tier 4 sprinters, but considering the field, they should stand a chance to bring it home. Looking across the peloton, 2 more riders I would like to pick out are Baptiste Plancaert. He will for the first time appear with Katyusha and had a very good 2016 season. Always good, but not that often as a winner. And the question remains if you can be good in the smaller French races, Belgian races, can you also show it on a World Tour level? Very crucial in that will be the role for his team, Katusha Alpecin. Will they back him as the main sprinter, or will they just say, well, do your thing, mate, and see where you end up? I'm a bit afraid that will be the second thing, and that will make it very difficult for Baptiste Plancaert to get more out of it than good placings. I'm quite sure he can pick up a fifth place, but victories, that seems a bridge too far. Another rider I would like to focus on is Carlos Barbero, his new sprinter for Movistar coming from Caja Rural, and he's known to survive, able to survive a heavy stage. And that skill could be very crucial in the Tour Down Under. It's not the really flat stages you often see in Italy or in the Tour de France, always has two or three of that kind of stages, pan flat till the end. Tour Down Under doesn't really have that one, except for Adelaide. And so there are a lot of occasions where the group can be split. Carlos Barbero is someone who is able to survive in a peloton of 20, 30, 40, 50 riders and be fast enough on the line. Well, I'm saying he will be fast enough on the line. It will be a bit of a take to see whether he's fast enough to take it on the line in the World Tour as well, but I do have a good feeling for him. That seem to be the main guys. Of course, there are a few other quick legs at the starting line, such as Renshaw, Van Poppel, maybe, and certainly Nicola Bonifazio, who I'm looking forward to see at the sprint. If you're asking me, I do believe we'll only get two full-on mass bunch sprints. That seems to be difficult for me as well. And I do believe Caleb Ewan could take those home. But if I have to pick another one to take home stage, it would be Carlos Barbero. He can survive a heavy ride, so I've got my fingers crossed for him. Question number 9. Who will be the revelation of this Tour Down Under? A new season, a lot of new faces, and a lot of riders that took the step up towards the World Tour peloton. There are a lot of them, and I won't focus on each and every one of them, but I do want to think about a few to keep an eye out for. First of them is Lachlan Morton, who already has been a member of World Tour outfit Harman, had to take a step back, and now receives a new chance for Dimension Data after great results in the USA. Will he be able to take that step from the USA to the World Tour peloton? That remains to be the question, and it's also not very clear in how far his focus is on this race. It could be expected that he wants to aim on doing good. On the other hand, Dimension Data does have a lot of other focus points, especially for GC rides. They need a good rider, so I'm curious how they will play the card of Lachlan Morton. A second one that got a chance at an older age is Victor De La Parte. At 30 years old, it's the first time he will appear for a World Time team. He's been part of some pretty shady teams, EFAPEL in Portugal and such. Last year he drove for CCC, and it was a bit of a surprise that he was allowed to start at Movistar. 2015 he won the Tour of Austria, and last season got an 11th place in the Tour of Switzerland, which is not bad, but still not actually a reason to give a 30-year-old rider a chance for a team like Movistar. Will he show he's worth it, or will he morph into a helper for, by example, Herrera? Good question. A third rider I want to focus on, and a personal favorite of mine, is Moritz Lammertink. He was the winner of the Tour of Luxembourg last year, and seems to be tailor-made for the Hilly Classics. So I'm really looking forward for him to make a dent in the Tour Down Under. He should be able to pick out his stage to appear to the World Tour after stepping up from Rompot last season. Another rider rides for Giant I want to single out is Chris Hamilton. He's a young Australian who has grown from the local scene to the World Tour, and deservedly so. By example, last year he got 4th place in the Queen Stage of the Gerald Sun Tour, admittedly not the race with the most classic riders ever, but it does show he has almost outgrown the local scene, and at a young age he could be great by Giant. The next one already shown himself to the world with a victory in the national championship. Miles Scott did a great job winning his first actual pro ride. Something that's very rare. I did try to find other examples. The only one I could find is Roger de Vlaming, who won his Omloop het Volk, as it was called back then, the Omloop Nieuwsblad, as we call it today, as a neo-prof. But Miles Scottson certainly will try to show his jersey. But unfortunately, he's a member of the BMC team, so he'll probably have to show himself for Port and Dennis in first place, have to do the work for them. He's a guy with a strong time trial, strong guy, and I'm sure we'll see him in the final stretches of the Tour Down Under stages. Next rider I want to focus on is Enric Mas. Spain is a bit desperate for a big new GT rider. They have good GT riders at the moment, but most of them are deep in the 30s. Rodriguez stopped, Valverde is getting older every season. We don't believe it, but he actually is. Of course, Contador. And so we're at a point where they want new major guys for the GC. And apparently Enric Mas has to be that guy. There's good reasons to believe that last year he won the Tour de Savoie and the Vuelta al Alentejo, which are for young riders excellent races to show himself in the mountains. I believe the terrain is not hard enough for him, but he should be able to be in the first peloton at Old Willunga Hill, and who knows, maybe he can do more. And last but not least, I want to point to a rider who's not just starting his first World Tour race, but who's starting his first road race at all. Ondřej Sink is a former mountain biker, and he will now race on the road for Bahrain Merida. I would have not the slightest clue of what he can do. It's shown before that mountain bike riders can make the transition. Very fitting to be in Australia, Mr. Cadel Evans. But what he can do now already is a big question mark. I think he will need at least a year, at least a season, to get used to the way they race on the roads. But who knows where it's going to end. My prediction, if I have to pick out one of all these riders to be the revelation of the Tour Down Under, is going to be Chris Hamilton. He was already very good in the Tour Down Under last year, and I believe he's capable of ending up 5th, 6th, 7th in the Tour Down Under this year. Congratulations, you've made it all the way to question number 10. And that's how will the University of South Australia team do. For those who don't know, they have a great tradition in Tour Down Under to start a team of local, continental and pro-continental riders under the name of Team University of South Australia. It has been a way to allow young Australian riders to get their first World Tour experience. In the past, we've seen riders like Richie Porte, Rowan Dennis, Caleb Ewan, Michael Matthews show themselves to the world for the first time in what's the Australian Summer of Cycling. Usually with a splendid mix between very young riders who are actually U23s, a few guys from the local scene, and one, two, or three riders who have experience in the World Tour, but who for some reason had to fall back to the local continental or pro-continental scene. This year they have a very specific team with a focus on youth. More specifically, it is the youngest team ever aligned by the UniSA. With five U23 riders and two road captains to say so. The major road captain is Cam Meyer, and we know from the past that older, with all due respect, rider in that young team can be a real force. For example, Jack Bobridge won a stage for the University of South Australia, and well, Cam Meyer will certainly aim to do so this year. He has got a very rough 2016 season where he stopped at Dimension Data because he just was fed up with cycling somewhere in May or June. He did take some time off to discover again what he loved about cycling, started back at the track, and well, apparently he did feel that the road still was something for him, and showed so as well in the Nationals, where he did a pretty good job, was in the final attack as well. I had the honor of seeing him in the 6 days this winter, where he was marvelously good, very strong, and the great part about Cam Meyer is that he still has that punch to tear up a peloton. And that's why I wanted to focus on him as well, because he is a former World Tour stage winner, so the quality is certainly there. And in a peloton without really, really strong teams, often small teams as well, seven riders a team, sprints that will be very chaotic. He could be one that rider that gets away with 1K to go, 1K half to go, and actually brings it home. So I would certainly look out for Cam Meyer in nearly every stage. He will be road captain of a team with a lot of young riders, and Nathan Earl. Nathan Earl did spend some time at Sky, never really managed to make that breakthrough, and was left adrift after the Drapac wrap-up. But he did sign with a Japanese team, if I believe, and was very good in nationals, very attractive racing, tried to make the tag both in the Crit National Championships and the Road National Championship, and did deserve to take the starting line here. Those two will start with five youngsters and not a single rider of the IZOUE team. Quite a surprise. Riders like Bailey, Karrison, Sunderland all were passed by. But it does show a new tactic, or well, not a new tactic, but really focusing on a tactic that has been successful in the past, bringing in young U23 riders, such as the national champs in that category, Callum Scotson on the time trial and Sam Jenner on the road. Both very strong riders, but one I would like to focus on amongst those youngsters is Lucas Hamilton. He's not family of Chris Hamilton from the last question, but he's capable of rocking top 10, if you ask me. In theory, the same should be possible for Michael Storer and Jay Hindley. The three of them did a very interesting season last year, where they rode the Tour d'Avenir, the Olympia race, the Tour en Poste in Ireland. And in all those races, they showed themselves to be very capable of picking up top 10 places. It shows a real potential. And certainly goes for the whole team that they will try and make some attack kilometers. I would be surprised if Nathan Earl is not at least once in the attack. That goes for most of the other young riders as well. But they could also bring home proper results. If I would have to pick one, as said, I'd take Lucas Hamilton. But don't be too surprised if it will be Hindley or Storer. To do so. So that wraps it up for the first 10 questions of the season. I hope to see the answers along with you in the Tour Down Under. There were a lot more questions and a lot more stories I wanted to talk about. At the start of the season, 133 riders have 133 stories. I wanted to discuss Ulissi, Gerada, Backlund, Mentions, a lot more riders, but I hope we'll at least be able to answer the 10 questions asked a day. Thank you for listening. If you like this podcast, don't hesitate to share it with friends and fellow cycling lovers. If you don't agree with me, don't hesitate to tweet at DRDoisier. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.